as you guys know, we're getting ready to turn the page, talk a lot about youth culture. In this part of the section of the class, really what I'm trying to do is identify why we're doing what we're doing. We know the calls from God to create this ministry, to be a part of this ministry that goes towards youth. Now we're going to talk about why is there a need, and specifically focusing on understanding today's youth culture. Now, just so you know, we have a class that takes place during the January term that is simply on youth culture. That's all it is. It's on youth culture. So we're not going to cover everything here, but just hit some of the highlights. Also, you have a project where you're looking at a magazine, kind of identifying things in the magazine in terms of culture magazines like Teen People, Teen Style. We're going to look at some of those in a minute. But I'd like to start by saying that one of the best books ever written on youth ministry is fill in the blank. What do you think? Okay, Purpose Driven Youth Ministry. Other ones? On youth culture. Well, how about on youth culture? Yeah. The postmodern one, or is it Millennial Risings? That's okay. Title Solicit. Yeah, okay. There's several books for that. There's the Walt Mueller's book, Understanding Today's Youth Culture. Is that the book? Great book. And I'm going to talk a lot about Walt Mueller. His Center for Parent Youth Understanding is phenomenal, and we're going to talk a lot about that. That is the resource you need to know, and I think we've given you probably information on that resource in the syllabus. Tremendous understanding of culture and pursuit of it. He's a good friend. He's on the Youth and Ministry Institute Advisory Board. Just a great, great guy. But that's not the best book, I think, written on youth culture for people to really take in. What is? Harry Potter, all right, possibly. Throw some others. What would it be? What would be one that you've read, you've been a part of, that would probably be very significant for your understanding of youth culture? No, that's always this. That's the good Sunday school child answer, isn't it? The Bible, Jesus, God. I love to think about this because I think it's so significant. I think that one of the best books ever written on youth culture is your high school yearbook. And the reason is because when you go to it, and you open it, suddenly the flood of emotions, feelings, anxieties come rushing back to you about what life was like. Does that make sense? You'll flip the pages and see people that you didn't like. You'll flip the pages and see people that you did like, but they didn't like you. Whether it was a boy or a girl. You'll flip the pages and look at people who you know, because your 10-year reunion is coming up or you just had it, that their lives are a mess. You look at people and go, I wonder what happened to him. I wonder what happened to her. And you'll look as you get older at people's faces who have already died. Two girls in my class have already died of cancer. I graduated in 1985. They're not that old. People who've been in automobile accidents, etc. But suddenly you'll begin to go back and think about things as they were when you were in high school. In the first part of this section, I want you to realize that most of what you experienced in high school emotionally is still the same for those students today. Much of it's different, but much is the same. So what I want you to do is I want you to get in pairs. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10. Good. Get in pairs, just a couple of you. 1 and 2. And I want you to run through this little box here. Who were you? Favorite food, musician, movie, actor, actress. What was your favorite class? Best friends' names. What was your greatest joy, your greatest fear? And then 4 words that describe you in high school. And how well did you relate to your parents? What were the issues there? So real quickly, we'll take maybe 5 minutes. I want you to just walk through this together as quickly as possible and just kind of identify what things were like for you then. Okay? Make sure you know each other's name. Okay, let's pull it back together, have a little fun. Yeah, a little trip down nostalgia lane there. All right. What did you find interesting about the person you were with? So you can rat on them. What are some of your favorite foods, et cetera, classes? So I want you to start us off. You can do each other, if you can remember. Talk loud. Okay, so did you like Magnum P.I.? I don't know the song, but I like the shorts. You know, they were just the perfect length. You know, the early 80s, yeah. Magnum P.I. Okay, what else?
Maggie loved french fries.
Huh?
She definitely had identifiable best friends.
Oh, that's good. Are they still best friends?
I stay in touch with two of them.
Okay. Okay. All right. Trying to think of other things on there. How about 4 words that described?
We didn't get that far.
Didn't get that far? Okay, who got that far? All right, Steve, tell us what you guys said.
Oh, yeah, right. He was a friend. He was a goof.
goof?
Yeah. She's poor. She says she never had any money. I had a job on the weekend, so I was insecure. And friendly.
Okay. So poor, insecure, friendly, and a goof.
Yeah.
And right. Steve was...
They had good listening skills. Look at them. They're reading each other's notes. They wrote it about themselves. I love it. Go ahead, Steve. Go ahead, David.
He was attention-starved, jealous, and for the Lord, but maybe in an offensive way.
Obnoxious.
Insecure and spastic.
Okay. Those are good words. I knew Steve in high school at the very end. Those might be some...
Spam the worst, though. That was...
Oh, maybe I'm glad. All right, moving on. Anybody else? Favorites. How about you two? Four words that describe you in high school.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What about, what was his favorite food?
Crab legs.
Crab legs, really? Where'd you grow up?
High school.
Yeah, I tell you, anytime you go to all you can eat crab legs.
You like all you can eat crab legs? Okay. I have to remember that. I love all of them, too. Yeah. What's the most you've ever eaten?
Well, my brother and I went one time and we ate for 45 minutes without stopping.
Wow.
Barely even talking, and then it just hits you and you're just like,
oh. Because you can eat like 400, and it's like barely a pound. That is not endorsed in this class at all. Okay, what was your favorite subjects? No subjects? Okay, that's good. You know, the youth can relate to this video. All right. Moving off the sheet, do you see how as you go back through and you begin to think about it, you can begin to think and relate to what youth are experiencing today. They have favorite things, they have challenges, etc. And the question I didn't ask on the sheet was, what was your greatest daily anxiety? And what was the thing that made you think, I don't know if I want to get up and go to school. I'm not sure I want to walk through the halls. Did you have any of those? Some might be like, oh, not really, but what was it? What were some of them? Bare your soul. Yeah.
Entrance exam.
Uh-huh.
It's about 20 years ago.
Sure.
I was in Korea. We had the entrance exam, middle school, high school, college.
Yeah.
We need to pass
those big exams.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was my biggest fear.
And so that would actually be academic pressure as well as success. I mean, you're frightened that if I don't succeed, I can't move forward with this.
Yeah, the pressure was very high. Even today.
Sure. Very intense. And students today experience that. You know, they're taking advanced placement exams, you know, trying to move forward, get college credit before they ever leave. You know, it's very intense. Okay. Somebody else. What was something that, you know, left you feeling anxious a lot?
I was really afraid of not having things to do on the weekends or being left out of the things that were being done.
Okay.
I think that was my big anxiety, was that people were kind of deciding to leave me out of things.
So social isolation. You know, really feeling like, I'm not being included. I will be lonely. Okay? And every one of us, if we're honest, would say, yeah, there was something I didn't like about myself or what I was unable to do or able to do. And the sad thing is those things often will follow you through life in one way or another. And you're probably not playing in the band anywhere now. I mean, Covenant Seminary doesn't have one. But you might have the same feelings. And if you can get in touch with what you were feeling during that time of middle school and high school, you realize you might not be a whole lot different now, but you certainly can understand a lot of the key issues that are taking place in our country today, in our culture today. Here's why. Let's talk about things that are very specific for the way we were in high school. Were you self-centered in high school? Most teenagers are and were. You weren't. Good for you. Most of us really were consumed with ourselves at some level. It might not have been mean selfishness. It might have just been if you're insecure, preoccupied with the way you look, preoccupied with the way people think about you. That's selfishness in the sense of I'm thinking of myself, consumed with my own identity, which is the next one, consumed with acceptance. That's a big thing for people today and really has been. How are people going to reflect the way I look? How is that going to affect? I saw a student, oh goodness, three Friday nights ago at a football game, and she was dressed perfect. She had the latest Banana Republic outfit on. I'd seen it actually with my wife when we were walking through the mall. And it wasn't probably the best outfit for a high school student to be wearing. But she was dolled up. She looked nice. She looked provocative. She was there to display her beauty, and she's a beautiful girl. My friend and co-leader said to me, he goes, man, she's been planning to wear that outfit for 3 months. The statement was, she probably had. Maybe not 3 months literally, but for some season of time, she had been thinking about the perfect outfit for the perfect night for the first football game of the season. You know what I mean? And that's what it's like, consumed with acceptance. Insecurity is a reality of our culture when we were in high school as well as today. Strong appetite for life and for pizza and other fast food, but they really want to live. And that's an important thing to remember. They are embracing life, but not quite the same way you and I probably did. Laziness, that still exists. And it was certainly around when I was in high school where, you know, I don't want to do that. I can stay up all night long, but don't get me up early. And if it's not something I really enjoy, I'm not sure I want to do it. They're seeking independence, you know, all the time. If only I. But that's a thing that really continues all of our life. It starts when we're in high school or middle school, maybe. Middle school, if only I can get into high school, things will be better in high school. If only I can get in college and be on my own. And then when you're in college, if only I can get out of college and get the great job. And then at some point during that time of life, if only I can meet the right guy. If only I can meet the right girl. And then once you have a spouse, if only we could have children. And then it won't be too long before, if only we could get our children into college. And once that takes place, if only we could get our children out of college and have our bank account back to where it once was. Then it becomes, if only our children would visit more. And then it becomes, if only we have our health. And then lastly, if only I'd live my life different. You see, that's the status of who we are. It begins, yeah, constantly critical. Looking back, wishing it was different. Looking ahead, longing for the future. High school students seeking independence. They're arrogant, not necessarily just always cocky and always conceited. And again, these are sweeping generalizations. But the world is centered on them. They're ignorant, because the definition of ignorant is unknowing. They don't think they are because they're arrogant, but often very, very clueless to what takes place. A couple of girls, this is so funny. We had a conversation. They had a flat tire. I said, well, let's open your trunk and get your spare out. We don't have a spare tire. No, I think you probably do. It's underneath the... No, I've opened my trunk many times. There's no spare tire in the trunk. Well, let me just open it. I'm not going to open the trunk. There's no spare in there. Lindsay, just open the trunk. I'll show you there's one in there. I'm telling you there's not one in there. And we had this 5-minute dialogue about that. And then when it opened up, she looked and she goes, oh, what's that? It's a spare tire. You know, and we laughed. They lack discipline. They test boundaries. They question tradition. This is natural. We did. We're materialistic. We're jealous. And the list could go on and on. I'm going to bring another list next week even for you to look at. But this is what we were like. And this is what they were like. You're afraid. You were afraid. You didn't like acne. They don't like acne. You didn't like the way your body was developing. They don't always like the way theirs is developing. You know, those kinds of things are real issues. But there are certainly things in this culture that are very different. For instance, if I asked you the question, what is the number one problem high school students would identify that they are experiencing? Not what culture or older people say it is, but what do they say it is? What do you think? What do studies reveal? Start shooting things at me. One of you will probably hit it. Loneliness. Keep going. Relationships. What do the headlines in the paper say? What are they going to point to? Fear, pressure to perform, getting close on that one. Depression's on a major increase. Yeah, okay. Drugs and depression, there certainly is a reality there. What? Acceptance, stress. What are the big things we think of? Academics. How about alcohol, drugs? You know, marijuana's on a huge increase in the community I work in. I mean, an incredible increase. We estimate probably 60% of students that we're in regular contact with at least have tried it. And a pretty high percent probably using it regular. Students will tell you this. It's a lot easier to get marijuana than it is alcohol. In one of the local high schools, heroin parties and cocaine parties have become very popular. It's in the wealthiest community of St. Louis. Very popular. The reason is because they've got money, they're bored. But the number one problem that most students identify is what you said, stress. That word hadn't even existed in our vocabulary that long. Not in the way we mean it. The point of breaking and cracking. When this was first revealed, it replaced loneliness, which for years in the late 80s, early 90s had been listed as the greatest element of stress. But then in the early 90s, it began to shift as people talked about loneliness, certainly still a key issue, but anxiety and pressure and stress. I didn't believe it at first because I thought, stressed? How can a high school student be so stressed? I mean, in a lot of ways, they've got the easiest life ever. You know, get up, go to school, study a little bit. But then I talked to students. I said to Bill, what's your number one problem? He said, I am just so stressed. I've got so much to do. I've got practice before school, these sports events. Then I've got to study. Then I have to work. And it goes on and on and on. A student in my youth ministry now named John lives not with his parents because they don't get along. He lives in an apartment with two other boys, all of them in high school. Two of the guys are seniors. John's a junior. He gets up in the morning and goes to school. After school, he goes to football practice. After football practice, he goes to IHOP, not to eat, not to have fast food, but to work, where he works until midnight every night. And then he goes home, does his homework, gets up, and goes to school. Now, he has the story of a self-made man. One day, he could be a guy sitting across from Charlie Rose telling his story of how hard it was. He just found Christ this last summer. Christ just revealed himself to him. His world is being transformed. But that's his life, and he's been living that for quite some time. That's not very attractive. High school students carry him daytimers, data assistants, whatever. Shows that this is a culture that's really different. Did you carry a daytimer in high school? Anybody? I didn't know what they were until after college. I mean, I didn't organize my life that way. I didn't have to. My senior year of high school, I didn't even take a book home. Not once. That was kind of my goal. It was a little bit of rebellion. But I still did okay. But these kids, I mean, you know, the time in life is to be like a chiropractor or an orthopedic surgeon because the book bags are so heavy with stuff to go home and do. They're consumed with anxiety. Depression is a result of that. And we know that the increase of medicine, I've mentioned that already in this class, is great because of that. Well, what makes them so stressed? Part of it is expectations. Think about all the people in their life that have expectations on them. Let's name some. Who would they be? Parents. Youth pastors, certainly. Teachers. Friends. Themselves. Coaches. Yeah. All of a sudden, if they're a rope and there's a tug of war, there's a lot of people pulling on them with very little skills to be able to deal with that. Acceptance. The pressure of just having friends. David, you had a great comment. I worried about what we would be doing on the weekend, whether I'd be included in that. That is a reality for several kids. I mean, imagine the kid who walks into the lunchroom and he knows there's no place for him to sit because there's no one there to accept him. Success, which you mentioned earlier. In Korea, big thing, very popular amongst the Asians. I mean, to push really hard and to drive. We're like that as well in our country. Maybe it's a different way, but the intense is there. The wealthier the community, the higher the expectation. You must drive, drive, drive. And it starts earlier and earlier and earlier. I mean, my daughter's 5 years old. She's in Spanish and art. She knows more Spanish than I already know. Kids can pick up language fast. But we're talking about why. It's a good program for her. It's a great thing for her to learn. It's exciting. But there are students already doing tons more than she's doing. I don't even have a computer. I have a laptop. I don't have a computer in our home yet. And my wife's saying, we've got to get one. I mean, she's going to be behind. We walk over to my office. She uses mine. She knows it pretty well. But the reality is, if she doesn't know how to read, if she doesn't know how to use a computer before she gets to kindergarten, she's probably going to be behind at some level. Not in every community, but probably in the community I live in. That's intense pressure to succeed. Relationships. This could be parents. This could be friends. This could be boyfriend, girlfriend. But they create a lot of anxiety as they try to deal with how to make it. Academics, we've already mentioned in some ways. Home life. Home life is not the way it once was for most of the high school students. It hasn't been that way for years, really. But now it's become so acceptable that this dysfunction in the homes exists that it really becomes dangerous in the sense that it's normal. You know, the statistics of marriages that fails, you know, right around 50%. And so it's a reality. And in whatever ministry you're in, you'll see a lot of that and the brokenness that it creates. You know, what is it going to be like at graduation when mom and dad are both there, mom and dad can't stand each other? Last Tuesday morning, a week ago today, I was sitting at the St. Louis Bread Company having a bagel, some juice, and just kind of spending some time alone. In front of me was three people, and they were counseling one another. And they were talking loud, so it was hard to not hear their conversation. And I think it's okay. to even eavesdrop. You can understand a lot about what people's lives are like if you're there. It wasn't noticeable that I was listening, but as I was looking down, I couldn't help but hear what they were saying. The first two, a man and a woman, arrived, and they were talking about just their lives as single parents. A third came in, a man who's new to their group, who's also in the midst of going through a pretty brutal divorce. And I listened to them counsel him. Obviously, they weren't coming from a biblical perspective at all. And the counsel they gave him broke my heart as they talked about the way you have to use your kids in order to make your ex pay the consequences. I wanted so much to crawl over the table and to grab the heads and just bam, bam, bam. But I didn't. Prayed, Lord, how will they ever see that they're destroying this child's life? Things about, I'm not going to let him stay at my house. I know he wants to. I'm not going to let him. He needs to be at her house. It'll be hard for her if he's there because she'll have to take him everywhere. She'll have to do all these things. And I'm not going to put up with it. And my heart breaks because there's a little soul hearing those conversations take place. Which is abuse. I mentioned abuse next. Abuse at a high level. It's not only physical, it's verbal as well. Sports create stress. For me in high school, one of my great fears was performing in sports. What happens if I drop a ball? What happens if I don't perform well? What happens if I do something stupid in front of people? I'm going to get laughed at. What happens if I cost the game? You know what I mean? Those anxieties are great for kids as they excel through sports and such. Am I going to make the team? I mean, in fifth grade, I tried out for basketball. When I went to see if my name was on the list, it wasn't. Ow, that hurts. I hate that. No more fun for me. Choices. So many choices. Much more choices than you and I ever had. And that can create a lot of stress. Think about the number of colors. You want to buy a new computer? I need to get one. I've just mentioned that. Okay, will I get black or white? That was the options a year ago. But now I can get cranberry. Raspberry, blueberry, lime. You know what I mean? All the different colors, choices everywhere. Music and media create stress because of the way the music is written, the amount of it, and plus the violence and stuff that they see. It's interesting. Information, just the information age, so much coming at them. Alcohol and drugs can create stress. And then lastly, sleep deprivation. John Piper, actually, we've talked about him already in the last section, says that he thinks that one of the great, and he's not a psychiatrist, but he says, I think one of the reasons the world today is suffering from such depression is sleep deprivation. People are not getting the required amount of sleep that God intended for our bodies to get. Take this John child I just mentioned. He's not going to bed before 2 every night. He's getting 4 or 5 hours of sleep. That's not good for a body that's in such transition of growth. You know what I mean? And we're looking at our own lives. How many of you are sleep deprived? Yeah, most of us would raise our hands. It's not healthy. It creates great depression. Anything you would want to add that you'd say create stress that you've seen in students' lives or experienced in your own? There's a lot we could talk about, certainly. But just know that this is a major issue for students' lives. And when you begin to offer them solutions for it, they don't come easy. They don't just suddenly go, oh, if I quit sports, oh, if I drop one of my AP classes, oh, if I go to bed earlier and don't spend time on the internet, oh, transformation is difficult here because they're so conformed to the pattern of the world. Well, we definitely know that greater violence is another thing that's unique to this generation. Let's just think for a minute what those who are seniors in high school now have seen in the last 8 years in terms of violence. What are some of the things? Let's just think backwards. Most recently, World Trade Center. And the Pentagon, the violence that's there, and the violence that's soon to come because of the results of our counter attacks as we pursue our terrorist enemies. What else have they seen recently? School shootings. The one that obviously sticks out is Columbine, but all the others before that. Intense. Did you ever walk through a metal detector going to a class or into your school? Did you ever see dogs walking down the halls of your school? We saw we had drug dogs at the end when I was in high school, mostly just to show us that they had them, not to actually be there doing anything. So the school shootings. I talked to a friend this week who lives in Oklahoma City, where I'm from. And I said, well, how has it been this week for you all, you know, with the World Trade Center events that have just happened in the Pentagon? She said, it's had an amazing impact on children. Because the first bombing of the Oklahoma City building was so intense for them. and now they've experienced another one as they're trying to heal through that one. And you realize that these events really are going to shape and impact the culture that we live in because of the violence. But it's not just the things that they've seen. It's the actual weapons they've seen at school. It's violent fights that kids will talk about. Sexual violence that's taken place in movies, etc. Violence in the media. You know, how many times in the last 2 weeks have I seen the video of the woman in Afghanistan being shot in the head? Or the criminal. Have y'all seen that? It's over. Well, they show her. She's there. She's on her knees. Or it might be a gentleman, but he's wrapped up. And it's in the basically the football arena where they play soccer. And they perform executions there so that all can come and see what's going to happen. And the Taliban sits there and they point the gun. I know it's been on TV tons. And they point a gun and then you see the bullet go through the head. That's on TV right now. That begins to affect us. It's senseless violence that they see. Violence for fun. Think about the video game violence that's present. You know, I was in high school. We were blowing up asteroids. Do you remember that? They're blowing up people. They're shooting people. And it becomes an event, a tool that really brings callous to the hearts of people as they really struggle to deal with what does violence mean. Even like Jurassic Park. We think of movies like that where, oh, it's harmless. It's about dinosaurs. But when you see a human being in the mouth of one dinosaur and another dinosaur reaches up and grabs the other side and they tear them apart, most kids today go, oh, that's cool. The sense of that's human life demonstrated anyway is just missing. This last Sunday morning, one of the students in our youth group were talking through the Old Testament, and the story was told about the day in which like 185,000 people had been wiped out, you know, killed in a huge battle, which is tragic, especially in light of really the tragedy we've seen this last week, or last 2 weeks. And this kid yells out, that is cool. And the person teaching, which wasn't me, stopped and appropriately said, no, that's not cool. That's hard. That's hard. It's in our Bible. It's hard. And not trying to isolate the student, you could tell that the rest of the class really was understanding that human life is beginning to matter more. It wasn't that long ago, I took a group of students to Oklahoma City to see the Oklahoma City bombing memorial. And there wasn't a student who walked out with eyes dry. It's a powerful memorial. But the night before we went to that memorial, I took them to another memorial that's also tragic. It's where the first major postal murder took place. Happened in the mid to late 80s, where a gunman went in. David, it was in your hometown. How many did he kill?
Like 13,
I think. Yeah, somewhere, a large number, 13 to 16, something like that, people on a rampage. As I took them to that memorial, there's a statue there, and we're just kind of talking to a group of maybe 20. Kids started picking up rocks and throwing them at the statue. I was just like, stop! Do you understand what has happened? Clueless. One of the kids I talked to afterwards said, what's the big deal? I mean, it happened so long ago. In the sense of being out of touch with the consequences of death and violence is very real. But I think that's going to change. And we're going to talk more about the coming changes as a result of what's taking place in our world, the history right now. Other violence would be violence at the home, which is certainly continues to be on a rise. As we talk about unstable family life, we mentioned already, more divorce, uninvolved parents, no traditions for students anymore, no training really in some of the basic skills of life, and absolutely no boundaries. Other things that are different about this generation are it's the electronic and information revolution. We really are. When history looks back on this time, this will have been a real revolution. Our world has changed so much as a result of the internet and all the electronic stuff. Kids got their cell phones, they've got their beepers, they've got all of this stuff. You know, the first class that entered college, this year's class, the class of 2001 that started in 2001, is the first class that started with the personal computer. It was invented this many years ago. And so they're walking through life. They've never known what it was like to get up and walk and change a channel on a TV. They've always had a remote, and not the kind with a cable connected to it either. I mean, it was, there they go. Peer groups are very significant. The reason I say that is because the number one influence in a kid's life is listed consistently over the last number of years is my peers. Number one. It used to be years ago, parents, but it's not. It's peers. Number two is, guess what? Media. That is scary. Because where do their peers who counsel them, who are ranked as number one on their list of counselees, find out their information? From the media. So this vicious cycle continues. Now, I have a hunch that as these events continue to take place in our world, family, significant people in their life, pastors, teachers, are going to move more towards the front. Because what's happening in terms of media, popular culture, TV shows, etc., is not going to be able to bring reality into their life and answer the questions that they want so much. I mentioned choices already, but just again, more flavors, more channels, more schools, more religions, more opportunities, more good things, more of everything. And then new trends. Definitely different. Sex with no rules. This magazine identifies this as clear as anything that's being produced right now. There's a video that I will show next week that talks a lot about sexual activity amongst high school students and even middle school students. This magazine is pretty new, the September issue. It's called Teen Style. Right here, it says, this is the magazine for girls with attitude. It's produced by the same publisher who also produces a girls magazine for young girls called Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. Remember them? The little twins on Full House? Well, they've grown up, and there's a huge movement within this thing, a pro-woman's movement, which I'm not ready to dialogue about that. I'm wanting to dialogue about the fact that this is about women with attitude and the kinds of things that you're saying. I'm going to read a couple things here that are very graphic, and I don't want to offend, I don't want to hurt, but I want you to see the kinds of things that are being presented, because this is designed to be read by girls in middle school, late middle school, through high school. Topic here is, let's talk about sex. Make your school sex education stimulating. Basically, take it into your own things. Quiz, how aggressive are you? And it's not about volleyball. It's not about basketball. It's not about track. It's about the physical nature of relationships. I'm going to read 10 things of how to get what you want, written by a girl's perspective. Our top 10 ways to flirt your way into anything. You know, this is the message that they're presenting. Listen to this. It's all about the power of touch, number one. Guys are so stimulated just looking at your fine, still bronze from the summer bod that when you brush up against him, squeeze his biceps, or ruffle his hair, you'll be able to get him singing, "Tearing Up My Heart." You might want to use your rubs for something a little less disturbing, but you get the point. So start touching a boy and you get what you want. Body bribery, number two. We're not saying it's time to turn tricks, but a little teasing never hurt anyone. Teasing your boyfriend by blowing on his neck, kissing him softly on his ears, and playfully grabbing his butt are surefire ways to keep him guessing and wanting to do whatever you want. You know, I don't think this is the book I really want my daughter reading as she enters it. This one's the most vulgar. Number three, hit the high beams. Yep. When a guy sees a little T-H-O, that stands for titty hard on, he'll be both aroused and uncomfortable. Thing is, guys will stare, but they know they aren't supposed to. So they'll do whatever you want just to get rid of that awkward feeling. All right? That's awful. I mean, girls reading this thinking, okay, how can I do that in order to attract guys? Related to all the other issues of acceptance we've already talked about today. Number four, test his strength. Can't get your suitcase in the overhead compartment on the airplane, but too proud to ask for help? Tell the guy looking at you, oh, you'll never be able to lift it. It's too heavy. He'll be leaping out of his seat in 30 seconds trying to help. Tell him that he disappointed you. When he asks if you're mad at him, don't flip out. Just calmly tell him that you're disappointed, and he'll be groveling at your feet. Number six, make your face droopy. You know, it's just all about manipulation. Number seven, challenge him to a thumb war. If you're buff enough, arm wrestle him. Number eight, tickle torture. Find the most sensitive tickle spot and attack. Don't stop until he says yes, yes, yes. Number nine, fake sick. Everyone hates sickness, so when you're sick, he's ready to be your nurse in shining armor. Even if you're feeling fine, fake a headache or a sore throat, and he'll be catering to your every need. And then lastly, number 10, get him naked. If you can get him down to his bare essentials, you better believe he'll be at his most vulnerable state. So take advantage of it. Wow, that's horrifying. It breaks my heart to think about how girls will read that and maybe laugh at it and think it's silly. But at some level, read it as passionately as if it's the greatest truth being taught about how to get what you want. Another article in here, Inside the Mind of a Male Virgin. If you notice, the guy looks somewhat innocent. But the girl's here with her tongue on her tooth. looking now is the one prowling as opposed to the one being prowled. Girls with attitude. Next section, I'll show you a video, PBS did, about a community called Rockdale County outside of Atlanta where an outbreak of syphilis took place, which shows the horrific nature of the way young girls were thinking about sex, as many of them had multiple partners, upwards of 100, before they ever reached their sophomore year of high school. Some would say, oh, you can sensationalize this. It's true, you can. But the reality is how people think about such things shows us that this is happening in cities and communities all around the country. And the one thing you'll notice about the video that was shown in the next section is that these are wealthy kids. These aren't poor inner city students. They're kids bored, parents absent, because they're trying to provide everything for their children. Our community and our culture today has so much to look at. What are some resources you can use to stay in touch with youth culture? Real quickly, I subscribe to Rolling Stone magazine. Often we'll rip the cover page off because it's just so vulgar. But it's great to be able to look through there and see what are the things that people are saying about today's music and media. Center for Parent Youth Understanding, it's again, cpyu.org. This is Walt Mueller's organization, which is tremendous. We're going to send students to a thing called a walk through Athens this coming spring. If you're interested, we'll tell you more about it later. But it's a great, great organization for helping us understand what's taking place. Teen People, I know some of you have gotten that magazine even to do a little paper on because it's one of your projects. Entertainment Weekly, I focus on the family. Plugged In, YouthSpecialties.com, Newsweek, just regular news magazines like Newsweek and Time. Group Magazine is another Christian magazine that you could look at. Billboard Magazine, I mentioned here, your high school yearbook. Your local record store, watch MTV, VH1, at the WB, Hollywood.com, Time Magazine, and your local shopping mall, just doing some people watching. Middle school students love to hang out there. That's on Friday night, go there. They'll be wandering around looking for things to do, people to talk to, places to eat. Just watch, and you'll learn a lot. The community and the culture which we live in today suffers from a lot of the same fallenness that you and I experience. Emotional issues, issues that cause us all to struggle. But there's a lot of differences as well. The rules have changed. Certain things that we must be aware of. The point of this section was to simply show that there's an enormous need because of the broken world that we live in. God calls us as ministers to go in, to get messy, to touch the lives of kids who are here with the truth. Because kids today, even students who've grown up in the church, when they look at the world, they see it. And there's this circle. I want you to see this. I could diagram it for you, and I'll try to do that later this semester. But outside the world, outside the circle is the world. And the world has been lied to, but they believe it's the truth. Okay? I mean, money's going to make you happy. Multiple sexual relationships is going to make you happy. The right job will make you happy. All these things. God doesn't exist. Outside of this circle. Inside the circle is Christ. It's the Christian worldview. It's the way we're supposed to live. For many Christian kids, though, inside the circle, they look at the world and they're attracted to it. Here's why. The world has been lied to, but they've been given the truth. Inside the circle, the Christians, you and I, and the students we minister to, have been given the truth, but we believe it's a lie. The world has been lied to, but they believe it's the truth. We've been given the truth, but we believe it's a lie. How do we know that's true? It's seen in the way that high school students, parents, even you and I, will walk as close to the edge of the world as we can in conformity without going into sin. The question, for instance, I've asked every time I speak anywhere, especially if it's on relationships, is how far is too far? That question basically is saying, how close to the edge of sin can I get before I actually sin? What we need to teach the world today is that life doesn't exist close to the edge of the world. It exists far from it, deep in an intimate relationship with Christ. Not in a way where you're out of touch with the world, but simply in a way where you're really lining up at the center of the circle with Christ as your foundation. That's what it means to no longer be conformed to the pattern of the world, but to be transformed by the renewing of your mind. But the world is so attractive, and its lies are so believable. And so the challenge for us is not just to tell kids that. Don't go to that. Don't watch that. Don't listen to that. But to model that life really doesn't exist there. It exists far away from that. But if they don't know us and they don't see us as having life, then they don't believe that's truth either. Does that make sense? The world has been lied to, but they believe it's the truth. We've been given the truth, but we often believe it's a lie. That's the challenge that we have to go and bring into this community, into the culture that the youth is involved in today. Let's close in prayer. Jesus, only in your strength could we ever begin to see a difference being made. It's because you are sovereign, O God, and that you love your people, that you will save us. We ask, Lord, that you would continue to teach us what it means to minister to this generation, which has so many challenges facing it. We continue to pray, Lord, for our country and the world as we go through this time of real challenge, of real fear. Give us wisdom and give us strength. Bring peace. But help us, O Lord, to know of our need for you. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.